Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Yeah.
Feel like you're living in the stand yet? Is Captain Trips finally found its way to our world? Not quite. It's actually, to be completely honest, although the coronavirus is a cause to be concerned, it's not the end times plague that you think it is. No. Still doesn't mean it hasn't affected a lot of shit, though, and that's kind of the bulk of what we're going to be talking about this week.
No, we've lived through so many things that were supposed to be the end times plague that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. SARS, swine flu,
Ebola, Hong virus or something.
HIV. HIV AIDS was another one. Basically the coronavirus has been playing havoc all over the world, and the first confirmed cases showed up in the United States this week. Now, fortunately,
confirmed non-travel related.
Yeah, that we need to make that kind of that difference. The first ones that technically got in here were actually people who had been in China or over in East Asia before they came back, and a lot of them had to go through quarantine procedures. It wasn't a fun time.
No.
And then we actually got the first community spread actual cases of the coronavirus this week. And you know, cross your fingers that this ends up basically killing off all of the anti-vaxxers.
Well, if that's one thing
it's not a bug, it's a feature.
Yeah.
Apparently there people are working pretty hard on vaccines, so it's probably only a matter of time before we find a cure for it.
Yeah.
I mean, not a cure, but a preventative measure. All you'd really have to do is add it into the regular cocktails you get for the flu vaccine every year. But, so other than that, we also had more news from the Democratic primary. They had their caucus in Nevada. And, yeah, Bernie Sanders won it. In fact, he crushed it. Like, it wasn't even close.
Yeah, and then somebody said something incredibly stupid.
Yeah, and then, well, we'll get into that, but yeah. Also, this is the first time in this show's history where we're actually going to have four assholes of the week. Wow.
Keep fun. Yeah,
where do we stick the hose?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been quite a week, so.
Yeah, like we said, it's just been a hell of a week
for assholes.
Yeah, in fact, it's probably the first week we've had where the serious stuff actually outnumbers the non-serious stuff.
Yeah,
in a long time. But anyway, before we get started, as always, we have to talk about what we've been up to this week. You know, that doesn't involve us, you know, huddling in our bomb shelters. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I'm all caught up on Star Trek Picard.
I am not. Apparently somebody read spoilers for last week's episode and has not been willing to watch it just yet. And I'm like, can we watch it now? No, not yet. Can we watch it now? No, not yet. Holy shit, can we watch it now? Well, maybe when the kid's not in the room.
Huh.
Yeah, uh-huh. I don't know what spoilers he read, but I know nothing and I want to know by watching it.
Yeah, well, last week's episode was really good. This week's episode was even better.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. If anybody hasn't, like, actually started watching this show, yeah, seriously, this is probably the best Star Trek series that I've seen in a long time. I tried to watch Discovery and just couldn't get into it. But,
yeah,
this is amazing. So. And apart from that, well, I've been still listening to The Wheel of Time. I'm about a little over two-thirds of the way through the first book. Probably end up finishing that and starting on the second this weekend. Still really enjoying that. It's nice to get back to these characters. And knowing what I know now about the series and, like, going back and reading the earlier, listening to the earlier ones again, there's a lot of stuff that he had set up way at the beginning that I never even noticed. It's like, yeah, actually, Rand, yeah, he's been channeling the One Power quite a long time and not even knowing it. So, yeah, anyways. It's a great series. Please read it before the show comes out, because I have a feeling it's going to be considerably different in terms of the TV adaptation. Yeah, very well worth it.
Well, they kind of have to, considering that, you know, the series itself, like all of the books are basically bricks.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, you're going on more material than you had with, you know, Game of Thrones.
Which still hasn't been finished yet, by the way.
Yeah.
he still hasn't finished the last book yet. So what's the problem with him anyways? Probably too busy writing blog posts.
Do we know that the next book is the last one?
Yeah, it would be the last one if he ever gets it finished. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But, all right. So, Pat, what about you?
NHL 20. got started on the second season of the expansion franchise. And we had a brilliant opening game. And the team has completely shit the bed in the three games since. So, I've actually got them playing the fifth and final game of the opening season road trip right now, and if they don't right the ship pretty soon, I'm going to have to shake up the roster a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it doesn't come to that, because if any of you have watched the game one of the second season, there's a lot of potential on this roster. Hmm. But, yeah, it's definitely not going well at the moment, and I do not like what I'm seeing right now. So yeah. Stay tuned, and we'll see if they can turn it around or if I have to turn it around for them.
Yeah.
But that's been pretty much it for me.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
Civ 6 is happening again, because damn you people on Reddit posting all these fun things about where the natural wonder spawn. So yeah, I've been playing a little bit, working on the achievements, trying not to get totally pissed off. But yeah, that's nice. And I can't turn religion off, but whenever I'm not looking for a religious victory, I definitely turn that stupid whatever off. But it's still there. I've been playing Yoshi's Crafted World again, and yeah, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun. I got another Yoshi recently, amiibo. I told you guys I wasn't gonna do it, but yeah, I did it. And we've been watching Dragon Ball.
Mm-hmm. The Chris, original.
Yep. Chris, you made me want to watch a good Dragon Ball. Yeah. And we're watching it, and very, very quickly, my kid decided, no, I don't want to watch these dubs. I want to watch the subs. These are hysterical. And I'm like, yeah, dude, you want to watch the, you want to watch it the right way, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're like 7 or 8 episodes in, and I've watched, you know, I've watched episodes here and there, but we may just go all the way through. Like, what, wasn't there like 6 seasons or something of that? I don't even remember. There's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a ton of it.
Yeah, but, you know, other than my general, you know, my other main...
You know, Dragon Ball was shorter than Dragon Ball Z.
Dragon Ball Z lasted my entire adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it better be shorter. But
153 episodes.
Holy crap. But they're short episodes.
I mean, in... Like
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
The DVDs have a good, or the newer DVDs have a good, like, theater setup, as far as it'll just take out the intro and outro stuff. Yeah. So it just plays, it just injects that anime right into your veins.
Yep, that's how we've been watching it, and they're like, why isn't there a song? And I'm like, shut up. Go watch it on YouTube. I don't want to watch it every single time. But yeah, really, that's about it. Just waiting for Animal Crossing. And wishing that my contract was done before Animal Crossing, but it's okay. It's okay. I only 9 days after Animal Crossing, and then it's done. Mm. Didn't I say this last month?
Yeah, and then it got extended, so that was that was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to wonder. Yep, but that's it.
Do you not have the option of telling them to fornicate themselves with a tree branch when they try this thing?
I mean, they just assume that people are wanting to stay all the time. I mean, there wasn't even a discussion of, hey, can you? It was just assumed. Mm. It was just, I'm extending the contract. Mm. And, well.
Did you have to sign anything?
No. And I could have called. Could have called and told my recruiter, hell no. But I would have caught flack from them, too, because they get money off of me making money.
Yeah.
Nice setup for them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, it's other than it being a long commute, it's not a bad job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, oh, and Fast Talker came by again twice today, Pat. Swear. When people who speak Japanese are speaking English a mile a minute, it's like, your brain swirls trying to keep up with them. But
and you're not immune if English is your first language.
It's even worse that I was talking to the guy that sits in my office with me. And what is his first? Burmese, I believe. And he's been speaking English since he was 5. And he's like, I have to ask him to repeat himself all the time. I'm like, yeah, you really got to have your ears on for that.
It definitely reveals your inner rap god.
Yeah, right?
Cunning linguist.
Right. And we're done. But yeah, just other than work, it's just maintaining. I'm ready for work to be over, though. But it's not ready for me to be over.
Mm. All right. Chris, what about you?
It's been freezing the past few days.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I think starting Sunday, it's going to be in the 50s. So it'll be a nice turnaround. Hopefully, that's the end of at least the freezing cold weather. Yeah, we even got a good bit of snow, too, which was fine. It wasn't like snow to make the roads bad or anything. It was just that annoying snow where I kept looking at the hour reports, see like when is it going to end. It's like, oh, it'll end soon. And that was every hour. Just kept saying it's going to end and just kept going. Still snowing today even. So this is just undone with this weather. But yeah, as for stuff I did, I watched the new Pokemon movie that's on Netflix, which I guess is a remake of the original one.
Yeah.
With Mewtwo.
Mm-hmm.
Though it is in CG. Mm-hmm. And pretty good CG for the most part. The humans aren't don't look so great, but the Pokemon all look really good. And yeah, I wasn't really expecting this, but I saw the news that there are like weird clones in Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tied to this movie. So yeah, that's all about Mewtwo, who's created in a lab as sort of a more powerful clone of Mew.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he figures this out, and I guess, I don't know if the scientists that did this were part of Team Rocket or if they just happened to be doing it and Team Rocket just took them, whatever, but they're involved somehow in weird ways. And it's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good for what it is. Then I decided to play. I started up Pokemon Masters and saw that Brock is white in that.
Mm.
Instead of his, kind of like Polynesian kind of look. Which is just weird. But yeah, that's pretty good. I also have been just continuing to watch King of the Hill. Just finished the episodes where they go to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Which are just great. Kind of like fish out of water kind of stuff where they are just very ignorant of Japan.
Yeah.
To the point of where they bring forks with them in their bags.
Yeah.
Because they don't think there are forks in Japan. And that and they don't even stay in their hotel room. Mm-hmm. They stay in the sitting room in front, which is pretty good. And, yeah, Hank Hill finding out he's got a half-brother.
Yeah.
Which is also great. There's Bobby playing DDR mm-hmm. most of the time. yeah, it's a lot of great stuff at this point. Decided also to kind of just start putting on Futurama, which they also have. And that show is still great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, still kind of just, I just kind of put it on and let it go. So still kind of in the first season on that. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how it goes once I finish the original run and start getting to the newer stuff and see how that is. Mm-hmm. But at least those first four seasons are great. Right up there with The Simpsons. The best of The Simpsons stuff. And yeah, the I've been playing too much, just been doing some streaming this week, which includes... let's see, we did the Double Dragon and Kunio-kun bundle stream on Sunday where we played just all the Kunio-kun stuff. And mm-hmm. Phil was on for a good bit of that. And there's a lot of weird games there.
Yeah. That basketball one is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the basketball
the sports
game
ones are generally insane.
The basketball one's way over the top compared to the others. So you face, like Mega Man style, you are in the U.S., and you get to face off against one of seven teams. And if you beat them, you get gear that I guess makes you better. But the teams, like Mega Man, you don't really have any idea whether the teams are like super powerful or not or what their rules are. Because the scoring changes between different teams.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three baskets, surprisingly, stacked on top of each other, essentially. And there's a whole weird mechanic where if you figure out how to actually like dunk on one of the top ones or any of the hoops, you can like rip it off. And when, by the end of the stream, we figured out, oh, the other team broke one of my hoops and put it on their hoop. So they had four and I didn't have the bottom one, which is like, okay, this is a very weird thing.
Yeah, because each of the hoop has a point value associated to them. So if they got four of them, that means they can get times the points.
Mm.
So.
And there's even weird mechanics just specific to each of the cities. Like the New York one has like these subway entrances, and you go into one, you come out the other, like the sides of the Pac-Man maze. The Vegas one has these like slots that somehow you could maybe turn them on. I couldn't figure any of that out. So that like the problem with the whole game is it'll tell you controls, but it doesn't tell you how anything works. You don't get manuals with them. So if you're trying to figure out like, okay, how does any of this work? It doesn't, some of these games just don't make sense. And, but yeah, there's some there that are pretty good. The hockey one's good. I was just fucking destroying the other team. I think I got to the start of the third period, and I was up 11-0, which is ridiculous for that. But it was pretty fun. The soccer ones are pretty fun. Let's see. There's like Olympic ones that are kind of neat, but it's kind of hard to understand how to play them properly. Renegade, whichever version you're playing, sucks. It's very hard.
Yeah, I don't really think there's any good version of that game.
Yeah, the only good part of the Japanese version, it's actually colorful. But the American one is just kind of like dark colors. It's mm-hmm. kind of drab. Very hard to do anything. But yeah, like River City Ransom's good. The Dodgeball one's good. The only problem I had with that is that the...
Oh, Super Dodgeball is a classic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just knowing who you're controlling or who you're going to throw to at some times is just kind of chaotic. So it'll just change randomly, as far as I could tell. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that this collection could do to be better with, like, manual type stuff to give you context for, like, what you're doing. Versus just blindly jumping in and be like, oh, I'll try this out. Okay, what the hell's going on with this game? Doesn't make any sense. A lot of stuff like that. But yeah, for the most part, the collection's solid. And yeah, that was... then I showed Phil the Atari collections that are on consoles. They have actual scans of the manuals, complete with, like, stains and hole punches and all that kind of weird stuff.
Oh, that's
just
cool.
Happened to be... Yeah. Which makes it easy to, you know, get an idea of, like, what their idea for this game was.
See, as somebody who actually kept my shit nice, that would just set my OCD off something horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it was kind of just, the Atari collection was like, why doesn't everything do this?
Yeah.
Have at least, like, a scan of the manuals. Like, even the, like, NES, SNES, and Sega Ages stuff on the Switch, like, those are sorely missing manuals to help potentially further explain what you're doing in those games. That kind of stuff. That's, there's archival material that's actually interesting. Because especially with, like, the Atari stuff, like, a lot of those games are just one-note ideas. And, you know, the manuals can kind of flesh that out a bit and give you, like, you know, here's what they're going for with, you know, Yar's Revenge, which is a game that makes no sense at all. But yeah, that collection is pretty neat for what it is, and Phil's got his review up now, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Wednesday, I didn't stream on Tuesday, I was just exhausted. Wednesday, I streamed the Champion Road Beyond campaign for Fire Pro Wrestling World, which is the Suda51 written story mode. And I played about a third of it, or at least so every time you finish, like, a story or wrestling section, it tells you, like, you know, percent completed. I finished a big tournament, and at the end of that, it was, like, 33% completed. So far, it's not too crazy. But
the rubber band hasn't been pulled far enough back yet.
Yeah, you play as the son of the guy from his original campaign they wrote.
That's rough.
Has died at the end of that campaign at some point, at least. Your manager is your uncle. And yeah, the beginning is you're kind of facing, I don't know if he's like the biggest wrestler in Japan or whatever, but he's one that's very much talking about being protective of this Japanese sport of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing, and you have to go and just beat him. Then you have, like, a talk with him, and he somehow figures out that you grew up in Texas because you have the sport of Texas wrestling in you or whatever. There's a lot of weird stuff with that kind of stuff. Even though your uncle is written like he grew up in New Jersey, you know, forget about it, that kind of stuff. It's like, this is totally all over the place. All this stuff. But yeah, eventually your character names himself Blade Saba.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the spirit of Texas just means that he's a blind potato master.
I don't know, but they talk about, like, the essence of Texas. He got from his wrestling, which is, I don't know if there's much of an essence as I... You know, just kind of fumbling around with the different moves, trying to figure out, you know, what he has to offer. But then you decide on the way to go to Shanghai for a weird mixed martial arts tournament, facing off against a good variety of different fighters, one of which I think is a reference to Brock Lesnar, he's an Olympic winner, talking about suplexing a lot. Though his name is July Eagle. They go with a lot of weird names in this stuff. But yeah, you have to win that whole tournament. And that's kind of where the bit I played ended. So I look forward to putting some more time into that. And especially I need to just get back to the mission mode and figure out just how to play more of the game. Because I rope moves, like throwing people against the ropes and trying to do anything when they come back to you, is a complete mystery to me. Cool. I occasionally get moves in, but it's all just a heavy coincidence from what I've seen so far. But yeah, that's a pretty fun mode, and you don't have to worry about building up any sort of character, doing any kind of setup for that. So that was nice compared to when I tried the other one. It's like, oh, hey, here, pick out your name and all your, you know, abilities and moves, and like, okay, this is going to take forever. I need to do something else. And yeah, it was pretty fun to play those, because you just have to either pin the guy, knock him out, or make him submit. Cool. And so I managed to do each of those in the four different matches I had. It's kind of a fun just take, because they get rid of your standard wrestling moves, just all your strikes, and though I had a kind of a suplex style move that I could do as well. So there's a couple bits of variety, just kind of makes you wrestle a bit differently than you would normally.
Oh.
So that was pretty neat. And one of the things I got this week is the Super Nintendo Switch controller, the wireless one.
Mm-hmm.
I think they still have them available for Switch Online members for $30.
Oh.
And I got that in, and it works out pretty well. And I ended up doing a stream, playing a bunch of Super Nintendo and NES stuff, to kind of just put it through its paces. And it works pretty well. The only issue is that there's no home or screenshot button on it. So if you're trying to use it like a normal Pro controller, you can't. But the SNES and NES apps do just remap the ZL and ZR buttons to those buttons. So those ones you can sort of get out and go play other stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you are playing, you know, other games that you can with just a D-pad and, you know, four face buttons and maybe the shoulder buttons, you can not get out of those games. So you have to, you know, either pull off one of the Joy-Cons to give you that option to back out, that kind of thing. But for the most part, it works well. Though initially I wasn't sure if it was some sort of lag that was involved with Super Punch-Out, or if that's just a slower game than regular Punch-Out.
Super Punch-Out just has lag in it. It's
yeah,
built in.
That's what I was trying to figure out. It's like, this feels slower in some way.
Hmm.
Like it's just laggy, or if it's just the controller of the game. Hmm. And I played regular Punch-Out, I was like, okay, no, it's the game. Because that one I was able to do much better, though. I was playing Piston Honda, and his like flurry of punches, I was
mm-hmm.
not able to dodge so well. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And yeah, tomorrow will be Leap Day, so I'll be playing some stuff then, Saturday and Sunday. I'll probably have you on at some point in the next couple weeks here, Phil, so we can go through those Atari collections.
Yeah.
And play like 30 seconds of each Atari game until it stops being interesting.
Yeah.
For a lot of those.
I can explain Yar's Revenge because I may be like one of the only people in the world that actually understands it.
Yeah, and we'll take a look at the manual, see what the manual says that game's about. Because that is a weird game.
Yeah,
it's like a weirdly complex game for that system.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wherever the game is like, you know, you do the thing. You move, and then you push the button to do the thing, and that's it.
Yeah.
This game's like, okay, you got to set up the shot, avoid the attacks from the thing. Mm-hmm. The Yar or whatever it is, that kind of thing. You have to carve out room for the shot, that kind of stuff. It's all weird.
Mm.
Weird and complex, but yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Last night I finished the main campaign for Metro Exodus, so you know, that's good. Man, that game is great, and that last segment of the game is absolutely nerve-wracking. You basically have to go into a new metro system in this nearby city in order to get this medicine. And in order to do so, you basically have to walk through a city that is, like, more irradiated than Moscow was, which means that you're constantly having to, you know, monitor your, you know, the radiation levels that you're in at any given time. You have to constantly duck into various places and caves and stuff nearby to get away from it. And it's also like the one part of the game where you can basically never take off your gas mask, because on top of the radiation, there's also a lot of poison gases and spores flying around too. And if that weren't bad enough, this is the only part of the game where you end up getting having to fight against mutated gorillas that are blind. Which you would think, oh, well, that sounds cool. No, it means that they can actually track where you are by sound. So every time you actually try to attack them, they immediately know where you also are.
Oh, crap.
So you end up, so you have to dodge them again.
Yeah, this sounds tense.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Fortunately, the game does, this part of the game does provide plenty of filters that you can get, so you can constantly update your... You know, you can constantly, like, extend the effectiveness of your gas mask. So, fortunately, it does give you a bit of a hand. But everything else is basically there to kill you. and kill you in just the absolute worst possible way it can conceive of. This is especially bad when you end up having to go down into the flooded parts of this city's metro. Because unlike in like the metro in Moscow, where you have to deal with like giant mutated shrimps and stuff like that, you have something completely different: giant mutated leeches.
Yeah.
That spit smaller leeches at you.
Who the hell thinks these things up? Masochist.
And then on top of that, there's this weird sort of fleshy growth that started slowly taking over this part of the metro. So it basically looks like you're trying to crawl through a tunnel made of human skin.
This is why we miss Sigmund Freud.
Yeah. But otherwise, other than that, it's pretty good.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah. So now that I got that done, I went ahead and got a... I went ahead and got Sam's Story, which is like the post-narrative DLC, and I'm going to get started on that tonight. So other than that, also reading, I mean, not reading, but playing, you know, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Still a good game. I mean, it's still Assassin's Creed, but it's definitely a better Assassin's Creed than a lot of the games that have come before.
It's also an endless game.
Yeah,
there's
pretty much
endless amounts of content there.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, at least it's good. So, there's also so yeah, I'm playing that. I also immediately remember playing this game, and it's starting off. I'm like, these guys definitely watch 300, because the very beginning is literally the Battle of Thermopylae, and it is freaking yeah. It's like at any moment I was here and going to hear him scream, "This is Sparta!" Sure enough, about midway through the battle, he screams, "This is Sparta."
Okay.
Yeah. So that, usual reading, you know, I went to the used bookstore yesterday, and I got a bunch of old Harlan Ellison paperbacks. So stuff like, it was stuff like, you know, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, Pain God and Other Delusions, Gentleman Junkies, copy, an old vintage copy of Rockabilly, which was actually the original title for his novel Spider Kiss, which was basically a book that kind of inadvertently predicted the entire career trajectory of both Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis Presley at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I didn't expect to go there, look around in the used books, and find a freaking copy of the freaking Turner Diaries, but that's another story. For those of you who don't know, the Turner Diaries is the book that inspired Timothy McVeigh to commit the Robert McNamara Federal Oklahoma City bombing back in 1996.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently there's a freaking neo-Nazi in the town. Wonderful. And other than that, also music. Started getting back into Blue Oyster Cult again. Especially some of their earlier stuff. Like, I love the later stuff, but the earlier stuff's kind of a different beast entirely. It's much more, like, psychedelic and bluesy in nature. Like, it's definitely very indicative of, like, what pre-Led Zeppelin hard rock sounded like. It's just almost like Deep Purple, but not quite as fast as Deep Purple would be. But still good stuff. Yeah, that's just about it. So, anybody got anything else you want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, well then, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, well, technically next week, but I'm doing this week because otherwise I might forget it next week. On Thursday of next week, March 4th, is going to be the 120th birthday of a person who has affected all of our lives. In fact, he's affected the lives of just about every person on Earth, mostly because he's the guy responsible for creating something that we've all eaten at one time or another, either because we were, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of cash to work with, or you know, we were trying to cut back on certain things, or maybe just we genuinely liked the stuff. And that man was the Taiwanese/Japanese businessman Momofuku Ando, the man who invented instant noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've all eaten them at one time or another, haven't we?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they're pretty much everywhere now. In fact, they're legit probably the one part of Japanese culture that you are almost absolutely guaranteed to find in everywhere. It could be the most remote mountain on Earth, and there will still be a convenience store somewhere selling this stuff.
Yeah.
If not having its own brand outright. But yeah, so instant ramen, well, we call it ramen. That's another thing I kind of have to bring up. For a long time here in the U.S., when people thought of ramen, this is what they thought of. Because this is like the, you know, because that's how it was marketed. It was top ramen, right?
Yep.
Stuff that, you know, was cheap and it was kind of relatively nutritious.
Yeah, I mean, that people usually will add a lot to ramen, you know, eggs and vegetables. And I mean, there's ways of making it with a coffee maker and vegetables in the little basket. So you make your own vegetable broth.
Yep.
Kind of nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, people have found a bunch of ingenious ways to work with this stuff. And yet, you would not believe this, but when it first came out, it was actually considered a luxury. So I got to sort of explain here. So Momofuku Ando, he founded Nissin Foods, which if you probably know Nissin Foods, they're, you know, they're the people who create cup noodles, which is like when you genuinely think of, like, it's either that or Maruchan, and Maruchan is
not your favorite?
Not at all. I mean, technically, Maruchan is, like, cheaper, but, well, let's just say it tastes like it, too.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you guys could always buy sauces and shit that the company I'm working for makes.
Yeah, it's true.
That's their thing.
Yeah. So, Momofuku Ando was originally born in Japanese Taiwan. Well, Japanese Formosa. Those of you know, back in 1910. For those of you who know a little bit about history, you'll know that Taiwan and a good chunk of what we now call the People's Republic of China once originally was ruled by the Empire of Japan. And Ando was actually a mostly full-blooded Taiwanese gentleman who was born there. He was born in 1910, where he basically lived until around the towards the end of 1946, when he decided to move to Japan. And the reason is kind of complicated, but basically, after World War II ended, and then of course ended the Chinese Civil War, you guys will know that when the communists won, Mao Zedong famously declared the People's Republic of China in 1949, whereas the forces of the Republic of China, aka the Nationalists, with their leader Chiang Kai-shek, made their way to the island of Formosa, which is what we now call Taiwan. Now, when that happened, Ando had to sort of make a decision. Was he going to become a Japanese subject, which means he would become a citizen of Japan, or would he become a citizen of Taiwan? So he actually chose the former because it meant that so he could keep like all the ancestral properties that his family had earned during that time, because if he was to become a Japanese national, it meant that he would forfeit all of the properties in Taiwan. So he became a citizen of Taiwan, but he still remained in Japan. 1948, he actually served 2 years of jail time. And the reason, according to his biography, was that he was convicted of tax evasion. Now, the specific kind of tax evasion he made isn't really tax evasion. Basically, it was a student scholarship that he'd set up for, you know, after the war was over, and, you know, all of the old, you know, the soldiers and everyone were coming back and they needed something to do. And he thought, you know, he came from like a really wealthy, well-to-do family, so he could use his money to, you know, help his, the citizens of his new country. But by law, those types of scholarships were considered tax evasion at the time. So after he got out a couple of years later, a previous company he'd been ahead of basically disappeared because of a chain reaction bankruptcy. So in 1948, he decided to start a new company. It's the company we now know as Nissen Foods. It was originally called something else. It was originally called the Chuso Shoka, which specifically was made to produce and manufacture salt. But right around the time of the 1950s, and for those of you who don't know, the first few years after World War II, when Japan was sort of technically a protectorate of the United States, more or less, there was a serious like food shortage problem. Because of all the damage that had been done from the war, from, you know, just years of mobilization, the country had kind of exhausted a lot of its like rice and grain supplies. So what happened is that the United States Army, in order to sort of, you know, help to, you know, sort of lessen the effects of what they were afraid was going to become a full-on famine, they started handing out, you know, flour and bread. And the thing is, the Japanese traditionally don't eat bread. You know, Japan traditionally has always been, like most Southeast Asian countries, got their carbs from rice. But, and Ando knew this, and he's like, you know what? I bet I could create something where I could, you know, like, okay, so the army's giving out flour and wheat and stuff, but, you know, the Japanese don't eat bread, but they do. There is something they do eat, and that's noodles. So he came up with this idea. He's like, you know what? If I could come up with a way to make a noodle dish that could be preserved and, you know, could be, you know, made like easily on the go with very little cost and, you know, very easy to make. I could help feed my my fellow people, and I could make a fortune in the process. In fact, that sort of humanitarian part of it is not actually fake. He famously said in his biography that he thought that, quote, peace will come to the world when the people have enough to eat. So in the late 50s, around the age of 48, he had finished up a sort of experimentation of trial and error to create basically what's the basic process that all instant noodles are now made, which is flash frying.
Mm.
See, the stuff that you get in instant noodles, those noodles are essentially flash fried in order to both dehydrate them and to keep it so that they can actually have a longer shelf life. In fact, instant noodles actually have a longer shelf life than frozen noodles.
Really?
Yeah.
And everybody freaking out about coronavirus?
Yeah.
Get your butts to the store and get instant noodles.
Now, here's the thing. The first version of instant noodles that he put out was called chicken ramen, or chikan ramen, or chaikin ramen. I have no idea. Nissan chikan ramen.
Okay.
It's the original instant noodle brand. It came in a little bag, and it was about – when it was first put out, it was actually roughly the price of 35 yen, which – is roughly today equivalent to like 608 yen, which is about $5.69 in modern times. That was kind of a problem, though, because most grocers at the time were actually already selling fresh noodles at like a sixth of the price. And keep in mind, this was also in comparison to like udon and soba noodles, which were also being put out too. So for like the first like 10 years of Nissan Foods' existence, it actually struggled to make a profit. But he did keep at it, and eventually he hit on what's probably like the big like slam dunk that he desperately needed. And that was in 1971. He had been going around the world, specifically to places seeing how like he could sort of put his food out and, you know, his product out and get it. And while he was in the United States, he noticed that when anybody was attempting to eat his product, instead of like, you know, boiling them in a pot or in a bowl or something like that, he noticed that Americans had actually come upon a really neat idea. They found out that if they took, you know, the noodle block and then they broke it in half, then they put those noodles into a paper cup, and then they poured hot water over the noodles, it would actually create a very portable meal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, that's just brilliant. Why didn't I think of that? And so he went back to Japan, and he came up with an idea to not only create a way where you could flash fry the noodles, which he had been doing to that point, but also put it so that now you could actually put them into a cup, pour hot water on them, and then, you know, put the little slip on the top back over, and then, you know, put something on top of it to hold it down, and just let it, you know, soup around in there for a few minutes, and boom. Cup noodles. That's exactly how he came up with cup noodles. Of course, he replaced the paper cup with a styrofoam cup, which is kind of the big difference here. Also, one of the things you may not notice, the cup noodles that you actually get here in the United States are actually kind of pretty different from like the cup noodles you would actually get in Japan. And part of that is twofold. One is the fact that the simple fact that, you know, the flavors that you can get of cup noodles here in the U.S. Aren't exactly all the flavors you can get in Japan. Because in Japan, you can get stuff like, you know, can get like curry noodles, tomato and broccoli noodles, seafood noodles, cheese and pepper.
What? Cheese and pepper?
Yep.
Huh.
Seafood milk, cheese and pepper? Yep.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. You can get all those. Whereas here in the U.S., you're kind of like sort of around to, like, you know, vegetables or beef or, you know, they do have a pretty good seafood version here, too. The second thing is the noodles. The noodles are essentially the same thing, but the consistency is different, and that's mostly by design. See, Ando figured out that Americans apparently prefer their noodles to be, like, really soft.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you get, like, authentic ramen noodles, or for that matter, just get instant noodles in Japan, you'll notice that the noodles there usually have a different consistency. They're a bit chewier. They have kind of a snap to them. They're more fit for, like, slurping up instead of, like, you know, just taking in a whole mouthful. And that's by design, basically. Eventually, they got rid of the styrofoam cups, and they ended up replacing it with waterproof polystyrene. And then in 1972, the prices for the product finally started to drop, and the stuff went everywhere. In fact, back in 2009, they did a calculating of how many servings had been sold, and they calculated it at 98 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
A good third of that is from the People's Republic of China, which eats more instant noodles than anywhere else on the planet.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's a lot of mouths to...
Yeah. Let's see. If I remember correctly, I've got, like, a table here. Yeah, so, like, the biggest one, yeah, is China. They consume at their height, like in 2014, they consumed about 44.40 billion.
Jeez.
Yeah. The most recent measurement was made in 2018, and that was about 40.25. The second is Indonesia, which at its height did about 13.43 billion. And then after that is India and then Japan. The top 15 countries of who actually eats this stuff, at the very bottom is actually Mexico. They've only eaten about 1.18 billion at their height. So, yeah, Japan only eats about 5.78 billion. But then again, you got to remember this, we're talking about, you know, size of countries here as well. So that plays a big part of it.
That's
so, yeah, that's a lot of instant noodles. Also goes to show you just how, like, you know, how far it's gone in, like, feeding people. Because it's a very non-expensive food product that's very easy to manufacture and very easy to prepare in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, and it can be modded into all different kinds of meals, and
yeah,
like you can use it in some faux Italian cooking.
It's you can.
Not even close to authentic.
Just don't tell any Italians. yeah, exactly. now, this actually was not the last thing that Mobile Fukuando invented. The last thing he actually invented was. He had decided that, you know, okay, so I've mastered the art of cup noodles. I wonder if I can do the same for rice. So in 1974, they began selling something called cup rice. And the idea, basically, it worked the same way as cup noodles did. It was a bunch of rice with a bunch of seasoning and a little styrofoam cup. And basically, you would put the... you know, hot water in there and let it boil, and it worked just, you know, it worked the same way. The problem, though, is it was actually very expensive. You know, but remember when I told you earlier about how when cup noodles, when instant noodles first started, they were kind of a luxury item? Well, cup rice was actually very much the same way. And the reason is because at the time it was first being produced, rice was actually more expensive per pound than wheat was.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens.
And he ended up taking a huge loss. He had spent like 3 billion yen to build a factory to make the stuff, which was like two times as much as the capital fund he had gotten. And eventually he just had to shut it down. He actually sort of like – he actually kind of blamed this on the fact that when he first was produced – when he was first like shopping around the product, he had like a bunch of people telling him like, this is going to be so awesome. You're going to be so – you're going to make so much money. This stuff tastes fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, he himself said – he himself wrote in his biography, quote, there is a trap in compliments.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in 1966, Ando became a naturalized Japanese citizen. He died of heart failure on January 5th, 2007 in Osaka Prefecture at the age of 96.
Wow.
Yeah, this dude played a lot. This dude lived a long time. He claimed that the secret to his longevity was that every day he would play golf, and then he would eat chicken ramen every day, his own product.
Hey.
It said that chicken ramen was actually the last meal he had before he passed away.
Aw, mm-hmm. That's kind of cool.
So today, yeah. Today, there is actually a Momofuku Ando Instant Noodles Museum that you can visit in Osaka, where they have, amongst other things, a nice statue made of silver of him. They have like displays of like the original packaging for cup noodles when it first started, the original package of chicken ramen, as well as a sort of a example of what it cost next to it compared to what it now costs to get. There is also a place where you can actually make your own ramen with like various flavor packets and stuff, kind of like the Coca-Cola Museum.
Oh
yeah.
You're hatching evil ideas, aren't you?
Yeah, would it not surprise you that some of the things that people have developed in that museum would later become products that Nissan themselves would actually manufacture?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And I'm sure other things have been concocted there that that weren't even fed to people in Abu Ghraib.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of the same. So, yeah, that was Momofuku Ando. One of the greatest men who ever lived, and all from a very simple concept that he ended up mastering.
Nice.
Of course, the technology and sort of the sort of ingredients and stuff have kind of changed somewhat. Right around the turn of the millennium, people started to talk about the fact that, you know, instant noodles by themselves are not terribly good for you. The fact that, you know, they're flash fried during the process can actually, you know, although it dehydrates it, it can also take a lot of the essential vitamins and nutrients out of the noodles that they would be they still be there otherwise. And also there's stuff like the effects of like sodium, because these things tend to be pretty high in salt, too.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
But, you know, the industry has moved on and will probably be around for the rest of human existence because, holy shit, I think like a third of the world lives off this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right. Okay, so, as always, we now have to get onto the show proper, and as always, we have to start with our assholes of the week. And we got four of them, so prepare yourself. All right, so, first and foremost, serial rapist and entertainment mogul Harvey Weinstein. He was acquitted of the top charges this week, but he was found guilty of rape.
Yep. Yeah, so you might have seen a week or two ago that jurors were kind of deadlocked on a couple of the charges.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like those two were the, let's see, two counts of predatory sexual assault, which carries a sentence. Each carries a sentence of up to life in prison, also acquitted on account of first-degree rape against Jessica Mann.
Mm-hmm.
But what he did get convicted of was third-degree rape of Jessica Mann,
mm-hmm.
As well as a count of criminal sexual act in the first degree against Mimi Haley. And, let's see, now faces a sentence of up to of 5 to 25 years on the top count.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so it's also not the only trial he has to go through.
Oh, yeah, he's got a couple more.
Yeah, so for the time being, he's in prison.
Mm-hmm.
They will be sentencing him, let's see, March 11th.
Yeah.
So about 2 more weeks, and then I have to endure some more trials.
Mm-hmm.
And unsurprisingly enough, when he was being led away in handcuffs, he was able to walk just fine without the walker.
Because of course he was.
Hmm.
We all knew that walker was bullshit.
Yep. And yeah, that's good news. Some justice for his victims.
Mm-hmm. All right, and next up. You remember a while back when we heard about the USC admission scandal?
Yep.
Which was, you know, a bunch of people paying a bunch of money to their schools. I think it was their sports teams or whatever, or sports programs, so that they could sort of sneak their kids in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we found out that one of them was actually the heiress to the Hot Pockets fortune, and she's getting sentenced to 5 months in prison because of it.
And what a country this is. Mm-hmm. The title of Hot Pockets heiress exists. So I thought there was a good joke on Twitter of somebody assuming that she says, my father, the inventor of Hot Pockets, will not be happy with this. But yeah, she was sentenced Tuesday to 5 months in prison for paying $100,000 to fix her daughter's college entrance exams and agreeing to pay twice that amount to sneak one girl into USC as a bogus beach volleyball player.
Mm-hmm.
How fucked up do your college entrance exams have to be that it costs $100,000 to fix it?
Yeah, right?
And or how gullible of a parent do you have to be to think this is the easiest way to get them in?
Mm-hmm.
With their dirty Hot Pocket money.
I mean, can't they just, like, get a good grade on their ACTs, get a good ACT score, and, you know, get in like everybody fucking else does?
Yeah, so... As she pleaded guilty in October to conspiring to commit fraud and money laundering, then she paid William Rick Singer, a name of a USC administrator, to misrepresent the older girls as an elite beach volleyball player. 5 month term came short of the 21 months that federal prosecutors had requested. They wanted enhancement for what they called an abuse of trust, saying she used her status as trustee of her daughter's school, the Sage Hill High School, Newport Beach, to insulate herself from the fraud. School wouldn't ask questions if she switched her daughter's test location to a school where Singer had bribed an administrator. She told Singer in a recorded phone call, assuring him, "They can't say anything to me." But in addition, she has to pay a fine of $250,000 and remain on supervised release for 2 years. She's the 15th parent sentenced in the admission scandal. Was among 4 parents who reversed their not guilty pleas last year after learning they would probably be charged with bribery.
Mm.
And yeah, we still got more to go on this. I saw Lori Loughlin is part of a group that's going to be sentenced in October, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a ways to go for that stuff until it gets shaken out. So, yeah.
All right. Rich people getting their comeuppance.
Holy crap. Okay, so her family invented the Hot Pocket microwavable snack.
Yeah.
Which Nestle purchased in 2002 for how much money, do you think?
Oh, it was in the hundreds of millions, if not billions.
$2.6 billion.
Yep.
Holy crap.
I don't understand why, because they're really not that good.
No, they're not. They're bugs.
Like the microwave process doesn't work.
Nope.
Like, the middle is always frozen, and the two sides are always boiling lava hot. Like,
last time I was eating them with any regularity, I just put them in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot better. And I like their breakfast ones are pretty good. The other stuff are okay.
Pizza rolls, man. It's all about Totino's pizza rolls.
Yeah. But 3 years later, her father donated $30 million to UC Irvine, largest gift in school history at the time. The university's business school bears the family name. So that's a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, unfortunately, we had a shooting this week as well. A gunman killed five of their coworkers at the Milwaukee Coors Brewery.
Yeah, they were all sort of...
They're shooting up breweries now.
Yeah.
Is this nothing sacred?
No. Yeah, that worked at... I'm not going to say his name, but he was an electrician for over 20 years and spent 17 of them at Molson Coors. And I guess he had been involved in a long-running dispute with the coworker that boiled over before he came back with two guns and started shooting. So yeah, just a guy who... got into some sort of arguments and decided to put the final nail in the coffin, I guess. And I believe he also shot himself.
Yep.
So.
As you do.
And then news out of Baltimore. The former mayor of the city of Baltimore, Catherine Pugh, has been sentenced to 3 years in prison for fraud.
Yep. So... this is the mayor that used her position to push a children's book onto schools and stores and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process, when she did the press conference sort of apologizing for this, she then revealed her children's fashion line or clothing line kind of thing, which had like baby's clothes with like words on them. So the babies can't read this. Dumbass.
Yep.
But yeah, she was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison for a fraud scheme involving a children's book series. The U.S. District judge described her crimes as astounding and said she took advantage of a career spent doing good, works to mislead organizations who purchased her Healthy Holly books.
Mm-hmm.
I believe people actually looked at these books and found like a number of misspellings and all this kind of stupid illustrations and such in there. Like the family sits down to eat vegetables and there's like four things.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like an actual meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we just eat these vegetables. That's it. She abused her position big time. She entered into a no-bid deal with the University of Maryland Medical System, where Pugh sat on the board of directors to buy 100,000 copies of her sloppily self-published Healthy Holly books for $500,000. She later resigned from the board, and as mayor, amid multiple investigations to her finance and book sales, told she netted more than $850,000.
Jeez.
Man.
Such greed.
Yeah, so now they're ordering her to pay restitution of $400,000 to the medical system, or $12,000 to the Maryland Auto Insurance Fund, which also paid for books. Had to forfeit nearly $670,000, including her Ashburton home, $17,800 in her campaign accounts. She also agreed that all of her copies of Healthy Holly books collected by the FBI and raids on her house and offices will be destroyed. And yeah, so she's getting a pretty good penalty for this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And she's also get 3 years of probation as well.
Good. All right. And now we're also going to do a segment that doesn't come up often, but every so often, well, it just has to. Dumbass of the Week. You guys remember Mad Mike Hughes? Mm-hmm. He was the guy who made that homemade rocket trying to prove that the Earth was flat.
We had a pretty good idea how it was going to end.
Well, it ended exactly how you thought it was. He died in a homemade rocket crash this week trying to prove the Earth was flat for a Science Channel special.
I don't know who's dumber, him or the Science Channel at this point.
Yeah, I don't know why the Science Channel was documenting this stuff.
To be fair, the Earth probably never feels flatter than when you pancake into it.
Yeah, the issue was that as soon as it launched, the parachutes fell out. So it was basically people watching this knew what was going to be happening as soon as he was going to land. But yeah, because isn't Science Channel basically Discovery?
Yeah.
It's like their new form.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what the fuck are you doing?
Of them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, no, don't.
Please tell me this rocket had Acme branding written all over it.
It had Flat Earth branding on it.
Which is basically the equivalent. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't laugh because a guy just died, but.
No, you should totally laugh. This guy was an idiot. It's
called natural selection.
This is
Let us welcome him to the bottom of the food chain.
He knew what the risks were.
This is what happens when you are this devoted to your science denial.
Yeah. Arrogant stupidity.
To deny science.
Yeah. Arrogant stupidity. Science. It is. This is what happens.
Yeah. Homemade rocket science.
All right. Well. Mm-hmm. So next up, we got our hero of the week, and it's the Seattle NHL franchise because they decided to subsidize public transportation to their games. So now the ticket that you buy now doubles as your transit pass for the night as well.
Yep. They partnered with the Seattle Monorail, and yeah, they say they want to make this a part of a game night tradition for their fans when they start playing 2021. And I think this is a huge step in the right direction that other teams in the league should look at, and teams in other sports for that matter. Because, honestly, there have been, usually game nights in any sport can be traffic nightmares and logistical nightmares. And if you can partner with public transportation to smooth that out, like Seattle's doing, then yeah, this could be a game changer.
Yeah. Also, you have to consider if you're, you know, going to a game and you know you've got, you know, free transit back, you're probably going to spend more on concessions.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So make smart business sense that way too.
And since you're not driving, get as drunk as you want.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, it's hockey. That's like, isn't that like legally obligated?
Yeah, if you're going to a game, you
like you can get arrested for not being sloshed off your ass when you're at a hockey game.
Mm-hmm. I think it depends on the market, but yes.
Yeah. Well, all right. So with that out of the way, it is now time to start the proper show proper. And unfortunately, we do have a death we have to commemorate here. You may not have heard of her, but the effect she's had on us is immense. Rest in peace, Katherine Johnson, mathematician for NASA. And basically, the math they used to shoot off most of the Apollo missions, it was her.
And yeah, she was commemorated in the Hidden Figures movie that was came out a few years ago, which covered a number of the women that were working behind the scenes to help make those missions possible. But yeah, she managed to live a full life. She died at 101.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Went a pretty good distance there. And yeah, she'll be recognized as one of our space heroes.
Yeah. I was reading the New York Times article about this, and there was a really good line. It was NASA asked Katherine Johnson for the moon, and she gave it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah.
You're not wrong.
And they basically used most of her math probably right up to this day.
Yeah.
Also, fun fact, people back in the day, Katherine Johnson, like her, were what scientists used to call the computer.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that like in some dumb attempt to make a pun or a joke. No, that was actually the job title.
Yep.
Seriously. All right. And so now with that, we do the big political news of the week, which is that the Nevada Democratic primary caucus happened this week, and the winner was Bernie Sanders, who absolutely crushed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And by crushed it, I mean it was not legitimately even close.
and the media is going bananas.
Yeah.
Especially the media. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the conservative and mainstream media are both losing their shit. Basically, Chris Matthews kind of kicked it off when he started – it actually started even before the Nevada caucus. It started with, like, the Iowa caucus. And he started going on this weird rambling about how, you know, he remembered socialism and the Cold War and Castro. And he said if the Reds had won the Cold War, then there would be executions in Times Square and he would be one of them getting executed. I'm like, dude, are you okay?
Yeah.
You need medical attention.
Apparently.
And then he made it even worse when he compared Bernie's win to here in Nevada to the Nazi invasion of France.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good thing to do to a Jewish man.
Who has Holocaust survivors in his family.
And unfortunate victims, too.
Yes.
Yeah. Like a number of his father's side of the family was victims of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very tasteless way to do this.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, he did come back and apologize later. But keep in mind,
don't compare shit to the Nazis.
Unless Nazis are involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Chris Matthews has said stupid crap like this in the past, and he's still on television, I do not know.
Because he's on MSNBC and nobody really pays attention to them except for, like, two people. This Joy Reid or, what's her name?
Yeah.
Rachel Maddow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two are basically the only people they pay attention to.
Yeah.
Everybody else gets to free skate.
Yeah. So, but then it gets a little bit more intense because, so a little bit of a backstory here, we have to say. Bernie Sanders, you know, left-wing cred goes back decades. And part of having left-wing cred is meaning that you also end up making strange bedfellows. He famously had his honeymoon in Moscow in the Soviet Union back in, I think it was the 70s. He was open defender of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, which, for those who don't know, that was also during the time when, you know, we were sending money down to the Contra death squads to kill whole villages of people.
Yeah.
Because we had to stop that daggum communism from spreading. Oh, yeah, they were also moving drugs, too. Did I mention that? Yeah, you know the crack epidemic that's happening. That has been a big part of urban squalor for the last few couple of decades.
Mm.
Yeah, you can kind of sort of connect it to that. Because that's where a lot of the crack was coming from. Mm. And we were helping them.
Kind of puts an interesting perspective on the quote-unquote war on drugs.
Yeah. But the big one that really got him in the ass this week was people got some positive things he had to say for Fidel Castro. Now, to put this in perspective, Phil, of course, Phil here is Canadian, right?
Yeah, last time I checked.
Yes, okay. Who is your current prime minister?
I think it's still Justin Trudeau.
Cute guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know who was Justin Trudeau's godfather?
Nope. Who was that?
Fidel Castro.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting lineage.
Justin Trudeau's father, Pierre Trudeau, mm-hmm. who was himself prime minister for some time. Him and Fidel were really good friends.
Hmm.
In fact, when he died, Fidel was one of the pallbearers at his funeral. Canada and Cuba have actually had really good diplomatic relations for several decades now. Whereas here in the U.S., Fidel Castro is considered to be the devil incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
So if you end up saying anything good about Fidel Castro or his regime, most people see that as political poison. And what he basically did was he sort of, you know, he talked about Cuba's literacy campaign and their healthcare system, both of which, by the way, are considered to be world class.
Mm-hmm.
Cuba is considered to have one of the best healthcare systems on the planet, and they're also considered to have one of the most successful literacy programs in the world. Out of a country that where less than half of the people knew how to read before the revolution, now over 99% of them can read.
Hmm.
And he was like, yeah, that was good. That was a good thing he did.
Yeah.
And of course, he also said, now, look, I want to also make it clear, I do not like authoritarian regimes, and Fidel Castro's regime was very much that, authoritarian. But that doesn't mean that he also didn't accomplish some good things in the same time. And so the media took this and ran with it.
Because they can't handle nuance.
Mm-hmm. No. And now people are wondering what the effect it's going to have on his numbers coming up. There's going to be another primary tomorrow in South Carolina.
Big one.
Yeah, big one. And the way it's looking now, it looks like Joe Biden's going to be winning that one.
Yes, because he's going to keep all the advertisers for the news places.
Yeah.
Rich, so that they still advertise.
Yeah. We also have Super Tuesday next week as well. But Bernie's chances are actually looking better there. He now has about a total close to, like, I think it's like 40-something delegates now. If he gets to over 50, it's basically over.
Yeah.
The reason they say that is because at that point, if it's not contested, not even the superdelegates can take it from him. So, man, get ready for a fun, fun presidential election this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be an absolute shit show.
Oh, yeah.
How would that be different than anything else that's happened in the past 4 years?
Valid.
Yeah, it's good true. Mm-hmm. They've taken upstanding people and dragged them through the mud before.
Mm-hmm.
They should have taken jerk-off people and dragged them through the mud even more, but...
Yeah. They're, thing is, though, they're going to have to kind of do some digging on Bernie, because that's kind of what we've heard now is kind of the extent of anything that can be said about him.
Yeah.
That's could be considered negative. He hasn't really changed his tune in, like, 40-something years, so...
Yeah, and people trying to use Russia stuff, especially on the GOP side...
Mm-hmm.
The counter is how many of them spent the 4th of July in Moscow for the past couple of years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're trying to say a honeymoon in Moscow is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like people don't regularly vacation over there.
Yeah. Well, see, that's different because Russia isn't communist anymore. See, they don't give a crap about authoritarianism. It's what side of the political spectrum of authoritarianism you're on.
Yeah, but anyway. You want to sell your soul to the Trump ass. Anything that he's okay with, they're okay with.
Yeah.
She's okay with Russia. Because he's attracted to their strongman.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, moving on to another news story. You guys remember Project Veritas?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, they're still around. And they actually got a journalist suspended from ABC this week. David Wright, apparently one of their, I'm just going to call them agents because that's what they really are. Basically recorded an off-the-cuff sort of informal conversation that people had with him at the primary in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Or he was just kind of being... critical of the way they're doing coverage. Not in any like overly negative way, just like the typical way you talk about the way your bosses are doing things are stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Like nothing that seems really all that big of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, ABC was, I guess, shocked about this enough that they suspended him.
Mm-hmm.
How much? I'm not sure. Like maybe a few weeks. Basically said that they're going to not even allow him to report on politics anymore. Moving on. Let's see. Well, I said any action that damages our reputation for fairness and partiality gives the appearance of compromising. It harms ABC News and the individuals involved.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. To avoid any possible appearance of bias, Wright will be reassigned away from political coverage when he returns. And it's like, oh, congrats, ABC, you capitulated to a bunch of idiots.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically just This is how you know the people in charge think everybody that works for them loves them and approves of everything they do.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, when you find out that they think there are ways to do things better and you get offended by it, then you're bad bosses.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that works in retail knows this feeling.
Oh, yeah.
It's true. I'm like, why are you doing this so stupidly?
Yeah. Like, why are you doing this to me? But yeah. And also, apparently, during the conversation, he said, you know, I identify more as a socialist. And to the idiots at Project Veritas, that's like the smoking gun for them.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
Next up, people that write and, you know, appear on these shows have opinions.
Yeah. Aren't you the guys that are all about free speech?
Not when it conflicts with their view on things.
Yeah.
Like normal, harmless conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And also recording people without their knowledge.
Yeah.
Private conversations. Mm-hmm. Seems like the thing that ABC should be not happy about.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like they're okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where was this that this happened?
It was at the New Hampshire primary.
Okay, New Hampshire.
Yeah, he was in New Hampshire. I think I had some event thing, like just off the clock.
Yeah. Oh, so I had to check what the consent laws are in New Hampshire, because there are states where recording stuff only has to be one party.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
It's true. Mm. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's already looking into it now. Because any chance you can get to drag Project Veritas to court and have them thrown out on their asses is prime opportunity.
If it's one party, if it's one party consent, there's very little that he can do. If it's two party consent, then
yeah. Mm. Speaking of news media bullshit, the presidential campaign for Donald Trump is suing the New York Times for libel over an opinion article that was published last year.
Yeah, this is...
What specific article is this they're talking about?
Let me see if I can find... March 27, 2019 opinion article written by Max Frankel. Let's see. Not sure if it mentions or links to the article here. I think it was about the Russia stuff.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the lawsuit is also about how the Mueller report came out in April and that they should have known what was in the report. And that this opinion piece was false based on that information that came out a month later.
So someone's opinion is false.
Yeah. Let's see.
Wait, what was the opinion that the opinion piece was having?
It was concerning the Russia stuff, the Mueller report.
Oh.
But before it was actually published.
I gotcha.
So, you know, if we're going to talk about opinion pieces on the New York Times, there's more damning stuff, but...
Oh, yeah.
They're opinion pieces. They're not printed as factual stuff.
No. They're speculation.
Unless they're specifically citing facts.
Mm.
But yeah, the thing people have been bringing up is that this potentially opens up Trump to a thing called civil discovery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Oh.
Concerning the Mueller report and all this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Seems like a thing if Trump had competent lawyers would tell him you probably shouldn't do this. Especially...
He's got Giuliani. I mean, he's got the... Oh, never...
I mean, he is a highly decorated IT specialist. Yeah, it seems like a very stupid thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a perfect Trump thing to do. And yeah, it just kind of goes against the whole First Amendment thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's
freedom of the press.
It's well established. He doesn't care about that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. Only he is allowed to lie.
Yeah.
Well, make things up. and just calls it his opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when people call him on it, he just calls it fake news.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, the I think the New York Times responded said, let's see. I don't think that's – no, that wasn't the Times response.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is all
– all you need to know is that it's stupid.
Yeah. The Trump campaign – oh, no, here it is. A statement New York Times spokesperson said, the Trump campaign has turned to the courts to try to punish an opinion writer for having an opinion they find unacceptable. Fortunately, the law protects the right of Americans to express their judgments and conclusions, especially about the events of public importance. We look forward to vindicating that right in this case.
Mm-hmm.
The newspaper spokesperson said it had not been served with the suit and learned about it through media reports. Mm-hmm. So at least they've not been served yet.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever part of New York Times it mm-hmm. is that gets the suit. Mm-hmm. Probably their legal team, I assume.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
All right. Well, all right, next up, the House of Representatives approved a historic bill this week that's making lynching a federal crime, and they named the bill after Emmett Till. Now, Emmett Till was famously a very young gentleman who was accused of whistling at a white woman, which then ended up having him getting lynched and dumped into a river. They famously had an open casket funeral so that the mother could expose to the world what they did to her little boy. There are pictures of it. It is not pretty. And that was the whole point.
Yeah.
A lot of people actually consider that moment to sort of be the moment that kickstarted the American Civil Rights Campaign as we know it. But yeah, good on them. Yep.
Yeah, there were 4 people that voted against this. 3 Republicans and Justin Amash. And I think Justin Amash was more in for, I think, a harsher penalty, something like that. There was, like, wording he didn't like, but I don't know.
I think he wanted it to be, like, state rights. Wasn't that his deal? I read that a few days ago. So I can't quite remember.
Yeah.
He didn't want it to be decided on a national level.
But, yeah, it was... This is a thing of like a sort of bill that they've been trying to pass for a long time, like 100 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there's been more than 200 attempts to pass this
mm-hmm.
Sort of bill, and this latest one's been in the works for the past 2 years. But yeah, it getting passed 410-4 is definitely a huge statement. That pretty much nobody. Is against this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just you know, calls it a federal hate crime, which is a hell of a thing to say. It took us until 2020 to do this.
Yep.
Considering when Emmett Till was killed, it was, what, 50 years ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even 60. But yeah, that's... it's a hell of a nice thing. But yeah, the Senate is going to be tough to see if Mitch McConnell decides this is something to actually put up for a vote.
Mm. Yeah, well, we'll have to see.
See if the turtle comes out of his shell.
Mm. And finally, our last big story before we get into the COVID-19 roundup, as we're calling it. The Federal Appeals Court has blocked the Trump administration from attempting to send asylum seekers to Mexico.
Yeah, because before, asylum seekers would be allowed to stay in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
while they await trial. And the Trump administration got the bright idea of, say, hey, what if we force them to not be able to do that?
Mm.
And yeah, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that, yeah, this is not a thing that they're allowed to do. Applies across the southern border and strips the administration of one of its key asylum policies, which went into effect January 2019. Mm. They also issued a separate ruling that upheld a lower court's block on administration policy denying asylum to those across the southern border illegally. And yeah, this Remain in Mexico program required migrants, many of whom are from Central America, stay in Mexico until their respective court dates in the U.S. On Thursday, Acting Customs and Border Patrol Commissioner Mark Morgan said 59,000 people have been enrolled in the program. That's a hell of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially those that have to, you know, live in Mexico for them to get their trial, which could take years.
Yeah. By the way, just a reminder to people, South America and Central America is not all like Mexico. Completely different countries with several yeah. different cultures.
Yeah.
You can't just plop them in Mexico and say, yeah, they'll do fine.
Yeah, and especially, I think there was a report a little while ago saying the people that we denied asylum to that had to go back to their home countries, like the vast majority of them were killed pretty quickly.
Yep.
Showing they're like, hey, maybe their claims were legit.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Well. All right. And now we got to talk about the coronavirus because it has unleashed its fury upon the world.
Yep.
And I think we've now experienced its most severe effects up to this point. This week, the total death count reached 2,800 and over. We now have 83,000 recorded cases of infection, as well as spikes in both South Korea and Italy.
Yep.
Italy? Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, there's a couple hundred over there. Which, of course, then that is spreading to other countries in the EU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because one of the interesting things about the coronavirus is that the incubation time can be like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You can take time before you even notice its effects.
It's true.
Yeah.
Which makes it harder to test for.
Even if you do notice the effects, the majority of people who get it, it's basically like very minor. Mm-hmm. So for them, they're just thinking they're just having a bad day and not knowing that they're really contagious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, like this is a bad time to be hosting big events over this next few months.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more on day zero.
Yeah.
Like some big stuff happened as far as the gaming industry is concerned, but there's other stuff going on around the world over these next few months.
For example, the International Olympic Committee's leader, Dick Pound. Yes, that's their actual name.
Oh, dear God.
I do not envy his high school life.
I think he just went by Richard.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I looked up his name. It's Richard William Duncan Pound. Other middle name is William, but also just goes by the name Dick, which is, I mean, that's a hell of a commitment right there.
Yeah.
So you know what? Let's just cut out the need to figure out his dumb nickname. Just own it.
Yeah.
Also, he has a number of books. One called Inside the Olympics. So if you look up the cover, it has the big words Dick Pound Inside the Olympics.
So now I'm starting to think that he can't hear any of the harassment for all of over the sound of how late it gets him.
Anyway, also, go ahead.
Just to cut that off, as far as thinking he's any sort of cool people, he has a number of controversies on his Wikipedia page involving a comment referring to people as savages.
Mm-hmm.
I think particularly about Chinese people.
Mm.
Now, Canada, let's see, we must not forget that 400 years ago, Canada was a land of savages with scarcely 10,000 inhabitants of European origin.
Mm-hmm.
On China, we're talking about a 5,000-year-old civilization.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Talking about the natives in Canada.
Mm.
This is Canadian swimming champion. Okay, this is one of your people, Phil. Mm. One of your finest people.
Oh, come on now.
Yeah. Swimming champion, lawyer, and prominent spokesman for ethics and sports. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's a nice joke there. All right. Continue, Phil. All right, Brandon.
Yeah, anyway, he announced this week that, because for those of you who don't know, the Olympics is going to happen in Japan this year. And he announced they're going to decide within the next 3 months whether to just cancel the Olympics outright. And believe me, that is a definite possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if there's an event where you're bringing in tons of people from
all over the world,
where we do not know, we don't even have like a concrete way of testing for the coronavirus, much less any sort of solution to it. Yeah. Having this event in, I guess, July. Probably not the best idea. Which is kind of remarkable with all the shit that happened before the Brazil games. What was it, like 4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Which they had Zika, there was political upheaval, dead bodies washing up on the beach where they were going to be doing beach volleyball events. It's like, wow, how did that thing keep going? Beyond just the vast amounts of money that were going into it. But yeah, it's going to be a big decision I have to make, and I'm assuming it's going to be canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're probably going to hold out to the very last minute, because this is one of those things that's like, yeah, you cancel this and the ramifications are huge, because Japan's been preparing for this for the past decade practically.
Yeah, they've sunk a lot of money into this.
Yeah.
And especially Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Who is basically at this point being like, yeah, we're going to have this thing.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the Olympics is a massive drain on whatever country it ends up getting staged in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, take that with you. But,
I'm pretty sure I saw a movie about the 2020 Tokyo Olympics getting canceled over pandemic fears, and then things got really weird.
Yeah. Yes.
Wouldn't have expected Akira to actually be, you know, prophetic.
In extremely bizarre ways. But, yeah. Okay, so next up, the head of Iran's current COVID-19 task force, they've been downplaying the virus's impact for the last few months, and then they announced this week that they were infected with it.
Yep, this guy definitely has it, ironically. The day before, coughing and heavily sweating, Iraj Harirchi told journalists at a televised news conference in Tehran that the situation is almost stable in the country. Obviously, the next day, he has tested positive for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, good job.
Yeah, but that's also, you know, it could be one of those cases where he didn't show symptoms until that day.
Yeah. Could be.
You know.
Yeah, though he was coughing and sweating the day before on TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those things, like, you know, maybe you think it's just cold, but...
Yeah.
when you're the person that's like the head of this task force,
probably be paying more attention.
Yeah. Be getting tested early and often.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Because I'm sure that's made everybody that thought everything was okay be like, oh shit.
Yeah, that's what California's thinking right now.
Yeah. San Francisco, like, they declared a state of emergency.
Made a comment after this, said, take care of yourselves. This virus is a Democrat virus. It does not differentiate between the rich and the poor, or official and non-official, and anyone can get it, which, all right, there's something smart that he said at once.
I think there's some lost in translation there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And by the way, we, the U.S., are not safe because this week we saw the first case of community spread COVID-19 in Sacramento.
Yep.
Yeah, not travel related.
Nope.
No. But yeah, the crazy thing about this stuff here in the U.S. is we don't really have a solid method for testing yet. Especially not that, like, any hospital in the country can do. It's specific people around the country where the CDC is at. It's a very weird, because this country is so huge that they have not really gotten everybody trained on this stuff just yet. I saw Troy Baker sort of talking to his doctor and asking for references for other people that might actually know, like, what the testing process is like and all this, and could not find anybody in the network that he had access to that could give him any sort of confident response on this stuff. And that's in Texas.
Well, that's comforting.
Yeah. And it's like, for how much, you know, people are testing positive around, the doctors that would be investigating this stuff should be getting briefed ASAP on what to look for and, you know, testing methods that would actually work.
Yeah. Also, because, well, I'll get to it when we finish up with this. So the U.S. now, of course, needs to have some kind of response team to the coronavirus outbreak, because it's now come to the U.S., and so President Trump decided to put Vice President Pence in charge of it.
Oh, yeah, this administration.
What could possibly go wrong?
So Pence is well known for not responding too well to the HIV outbreak they had in Indiana.
Nope.
Yeah, like freaking a huge amount of people
exacerbated
in a small town were infected.
Yeah.
Because he needed to go home and pray about it instead of act.
And instead of getting, like, needle exchange programs and such out there.
And then he still balked when he finally did the needle exchange program. It's like, well, I don't believe, and blah, blah. We don't give a shit what you fucking believe in. You have a duty to serve the public. And the public doesn't care about your goddamn religion.
Yeah. Sorry. Jesus is not going to stop HIV.
No.
He's dead. Or in heaven or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's not here.
Yeah.
Save you. You got to do the work yourself.
And to be that pain in the ass dude who gets drunk at 3 in college and starts philosophical debates. Jesus allowed HIV.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You know, after 2,000 years, you start to wonder if maybe he decided, you know what? I'm just going to stay up here.
Just moved out.
Crazy down there.
Yeah.
Maybe after 2,000 years, you start thinking a lot of other things, too.
Like maybe he never existed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
But
Pence is in charge of this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an administration that is full of science-loving people. You know, even to the point where Trump has canceled a lot of CDC programs Obama set up, specifically related to pandemics, that, you know, hampers them even now in getting this stuff set up and kind of going to the point where, you know, he is making or doing these press conferences about coronavirus despite, I'm pretty sure, knowing next to nothing about it.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys hear about the story about what happened when the originally the people who had been quarantined for it in China were finally allowed to return to the U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
About the team that met them on the tarmac that was not trained in dealing with possible contamination and was wearing no protective gear?
No, missed this one.
Is that the one where they were going to send them on their own flight and ended up deciding, like any good decision is made anywhere, to do the quickest possible solution, which is just put them on a plane with people that were perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And say, you know, we'll pray that nothing happens.
And then one of them went on to do an interview at Fox News. It was a long distance interview, but an interview nonetheless, where he basically couldn't stop coughing and was sharing a water bottle with his toddler daughter.
Now we are in the stupidest time.
Oh yeah,
the stupidest people are deciding, making decisions that could affect how bad this can get. And yeah. If you've followed anything we've talked about for the last 3 years, you know, we don't have any confidence that these people can make any good decisions.
Nope.
If it luckily does not get that bad, it's by pure luck, like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Like the economy not completely destroying itself with all of his dumb decisions. It's just been pure happenstance, but we might have a story on that.
Yeah. And finally, the Dow suffered the worst week it's ever had since the financial crisis of 2008.
Thanks, Trump.
Yeah, which Twitter is calling this the Trump crash.
Because we are going Twitter. To make him own it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whether he likes it or not.
No.
I think at least like two or three times this week, the Dow's dropped 1,000 points in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Which people obviously pulled out the old screenshot of Trump saying, if the Dow drops more than 1,000 points in a day, you should immediately impeach the president.
I thought it was that
didn't work out so well.
We can do it again.
We can try again. Discharge. Oh, but nothing's stopping us.
Mm.
Which I saw some like supposed fact-checking sites like, well, the date they have the number, the day before the month, and that's not how it works. And it's like, are you people this fucking stupid?
Some of them are, some of them aren't, but they're specifically trying to do propaganda. So
yeah, it's like you don't even have to be in Europe to change that setting.
Hmm.
To say, hey, put the date in front of the month. Like, just Google the date format, and they'll tell you exactly where places do this stuff.
Hmm.
But yeah. Yeah, it's dropped about or more than 3,500 points this week,
mm-hmm.
or about 12%, because the markets are reacting to all this coronavirus news and basically seeing the government basically pulling, you know, some real bullshit. Not they have any concrete plans on how to attack this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
We need to get out of this now.
Yeah. Well, and apparently Trump went on the news pretty recently and says that the Democrats are politicizing coronavirus.
They're calling it a hoax.
Yeah, their new hoax. That's what he says it is. Their new hoax.
All right, let's quarantine him with the people that have been quarantined with this so far.
Yeah,
so we'll see how much he enjoys this.
With a herd of fucking cattle?
We'll put some hamburgers in there and he can hang out with them for a while with his his Wendy's birders and his Burger King birders and all that good stuff. See how it goes.
Yeah. Well, for the record, because I need to emphasize this, although the coronavirus is something that you should be aware of and you should take, you know, proper steps to protect yourself. Don't let people get you in the dumps. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's not. The only thing that could be a problem would be our supply chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we've had, I think, at least one drug that is in shortage.
Mm-hmm.
Because guess where we get ingredients for many of our drugs?
China!
Yeah. Hey! And guess where they're not making drugs right now?
Yeah.
China!
It's probably a good thing right now.
Yeah.
And guess who doesn't have... And guess what country our current president really doesn't like and constantly tries to undercut with stupid tariffs?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I think Trump has also talked, like, in the last day about, like, putting pressure on the Fed to lower their interest rates. And what else was it? More tax cuts?
Uh-huh.
Because those worked real well last time.
Yeah.
Oh, so well. Yeah, right.
But, yeah, that's well going to be...
All the big companies that benefited from them, but not so well for anybody else.
All the rich people in country companies...
Yeah.
Like, hey, we're gonna get all this extra money. Let's put this in our war chest.
Mm.
Give all our execs big bonuses.
Yep.
But yeah, the whole thing with the coronavirus is that so far the numbers are pretty tame, but the fatality rate is much higher than the flu is.
Yeah.
It's like 2%, 3% right now. And the thing is, a lot of these countries are very anti-science with the people running them, and that's not going to help contain this stuff. Especially, there's a lot we still don't know about the coronavirus yet. How it's spread, specifically like how to contain it, beyond just saying, like, business being like, oh, you've traveled over to Asia recently. You're going to work from home for the next few weeks.
Especially,
I think Japan has basically said, like, you know, we're canceling school for the next couple months.
And that's Japan we're talking about there. If there are two things that the Japanese go hardcore on, it's work and school.
And they go 6 days a week.
Yep.
And all year around. If I've learned anything from Persona. The breaks they get outside of some specific holidays is far and few between. And yeah, like, imagine if we get to that point where they start canceling school for the rest of the year. Teresa's going to have some kids to kill. She's not going to be able to deal with that.
Oh my God. Well, you know, a lot of people are freaking out about possible quarantine because we live in a pretty populated area.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know, firstly, how the fuck do they think they're going to enforce any kind of quarantine in the United States of America? Nobody.
By the point of a gun.
Especially in big cities where your access to food and supplies is not as easy as, like, out, like, where I'm at and Brandon's at and that.
Right, because you guys probably have a deep freeze, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a couple of them when I lived in Kentucky. We don't have that here. We don't have that. We don't have the space.
Yeah. Like in New York, like, oh, hey, go gather tons of bottled water and food.
Yeah.
Get it home. I mean,
you know, we have this thing called sick pay that nobody's really allowed to take because America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's no enforcing a quarantine.
We have shitty attitudes towards health in this country.
Yeah.
When you get new jobs, it's, oh, if you're feeling, you know, sick, call off. We don't want you coming into work with this. But, you know, if you actually do that, they're talking shit about you. Like, man, actually sick. They're just lazy pieces of shit.
I quit a job over that once.
Yeah.
Actually, somebody accused me of faking my grandfather having a stroke and me going down there to be in the hospital.
Hell no. With him.
Yeah. I quit. Like, I came back, I found that out, and I put in my notice. Yeah.
I'm lucky to work where I do now. They were really cool with my recent bronchitis row. And you understood. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, you really wanted to have that, right?
All right. Well, all right. Moving on to the less serious stuff. Steven Seagal is being charged by the SEC with unlawfully touting cryptocurrency. Because of course he is. He's Steven Seagal.
But yeah, he was charged with failing to disclose payments he received for promoting an investment in the initial coin, a cryptocurrency offering by the Securities and Exchange Commission. And without really confirming or denying these findings, he just decided he's just going to pay the $314,000 fine. Let's see.
Fuck it.
Yeah, allegedly failed to disclose he was promised $250,000 in cash and $750,000 worth of Bitcoin to Jen, and that's two I's in the coin part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the naming for these Bitcoin offshoots are the stupidest things.
Yeah.
Imagine the internet naming currency.
And you get exactly what you think you're going to get.
Yeah.
Dogecoin. Yay.
Yeah, tokens. That's at least sane compared to some of them. But yeah, you got tokens for that in exchange for promotion on social media platforms for the initial coin offering. And yeah. It lets you put out a press release titled, Zen Master Steven Seagal has become the brand ambassador of Bitcoin to Gen. Stated he, quote, wholeheartedly endorsed the new cryptocurrency.
Yeah. To be fair, as a technology, the Bitcoin is actually kind of cool. As an actual way of doing anything in a stable currency, no.
Yeah. John Oliver has a good segment about cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how ridiculous it is.
Yeah.
Especially how just the name you give it changes how much like funding you get from VCs. Like, okay.
Yeah.
It's real weird. And I've seen like some of the the supposed security features aren't necessarily as good as the proponents make it out to be.
Hmm. Nope.
At times. There are some interesting aspects of it, but don't believe it. It's 100%.
Mm.
Which is the same for anything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Security is not 100% given on anything.
No.
You give enough, give smart people enough time, they'll figure it out.
Mm.
Yep. All right. Next up. So do you remember a couple years ago when Tesla, I believe, was showing off a new car or something like that?
This was like the first big fatal crash.
Yeah, this was the first big crash that Tesla actually suffered. It was
like right after they put out their like initial autopilots software.
Yeah, well, we found out this week what caused it. It's because the driver was playing games on their phone.
And their autopilot was doing some weird stuff and he wasn't paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was going towards an off ramp and did not make it and kind of hit the split part of the wall head on.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
you don't tend to walk away from that.
No.
No.
I can sympathize.
Yeah, but also the stuff is not autopilot.
Yeah, but that's not the point where you're branding it. That's the thing. That's
what like society has branded it, even though that's not what it is yet.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like we have specific like requirements for what to be able to call autopilot.
Yeah. And I wonder too, like how many hours that guy had been in the car and the car had never failed and did he start to trust it?
Probably a lot.
You know, and he's thinking, I don't really need to pay attention here.
That's why these systems are basically like, okay, you put both your hands on the wheel and you pay attention while it's doing this.
Yeah.
Even if, and some people are just, you know, too attached to their phones. They can't just set it down and, you know, at least pay attention.
Yeah. And the Tesla, it's like you're supposed to have two hands on the wheel, but it doesn't actually have any way of knowing that. So you can just
Well, that's problem number one to fix.
Yeah, you can trick it by just when it starts beeping at you, you just kind of wiggle the wheel, and that's enough for that system to go, okay, you're paying attention. Whereas a Cadillac has a driver assist system. I'm not going to call it self-driving because we're not there yet. But they got a driver assist system that can do a lot of the stuff that the autopilot does, but it actually watches you. So if your hands are not on the wheel, it fucking yells at you. So that's a better way. I think all cars should, you know, engage in verbal abuse. Well, this is verbal, it's more auditory, but anyway.
That's not a bad thing, and maybe we'll get to the point where Our cars will be able to tell if we've had a seizure and call 911 for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, my phone, I guess, after next month is going to be able to detect a car crash and call 911 if I don't tell it that I'm okay.
Yeah.
So why not? I mean, this is where technology is going to
be. We're getting there, but yeah, it's clearly not as there as a lot of people want it to be just yet.
Not, but there have been some successes, like the Apple Watch fall detector mm-hmm. has been actually very successful.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Walmart is looking to launch an Amazon Prime competitor called Walmart Plus. And you know that Amazon is eating Walmart's lunch when they decided that they need to compete with Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe this program that they're looking to start testing publicly pretty soon, it says as soon as next month, is largely going to be focused around their Delivery Unlimited service.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about $98 a year for unlimited same-day delivery of fresh groceries from one of their 1,600-plus Walmart stores in the U.S. where it's available.
Oh, but their groceries are shit. Yes. Have you seen their produce?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I used to work at one.
Oh.
Let's see.
I guess you guys have worse produce than we do because the produce at our Walmart is actually pretty damn good. So.
Well, yeah, but you guys have better regulations than we do.
True.
Yeah, so they're also considering launching Walmart Plus with a feature that would allow customers to use text messaging to place orders. And so the amounts of the Walmart Plus fee could still change. The company might test multiple price points. Yeah, they're going to, I guess the long-term vision is just adding more perks to this, which include discounts on prescription drugs at Walmart pharmacies and fuel at Walmart gas stations, as well as a scan-and-go service that would allow shoppers to check out in Walmart stores without waiting in line, which I guess is a thing they tried out a couple years ago and never kind of continued with it.
Mm.
But yeah, it seems like the grocery delivery stuff is at least the first part of it that they're going to be working on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the stuff that genuinely would interest me. Because, somebody who can't get around too much. Yeah, doing groceries is a really huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
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 Especially dealing with the huge crowds and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's not supposed to be a stigma of going into a store with a cane, but people still look at you funny.
Oh, yeah.
That's when you beat them with it.
Mm. Yeah, you've got a weapon at hand, dude. Use it.
The problem with my cane is that it's telescopic, so if I hit somebody with it, it just goes boring. So, yeah.
It still gets the message across.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I don't know, man. If like a little kid not behaving, it'd kind of be fun to take the cane and boing him.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you're obligated to.
Yeah. But anyways.
Laugh at my disability, will you, you little shit? Mm. Boing.
I'll give you a disability.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Next up. All right. Next up, Disney is going to be adding the Impossible Burgers to its park menus.
Sweet.
I can only consider this positive.
Yep.
It's the more we're able to slowly wean the human race off of full-on meat consumption, the better.
Yeah, and it's a good place to do that because Disney will overcharge for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it'll be a big profit.
Yeah. Yep.
I recently figured out that the Impossible Whopper, it's Burger King is part of their $2 for $6 mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
So instead of paying, $5.50 or whatever it is for one, you can just get $2 for $6.
Yep.
It's like, all right, this is much more friendly to the wallet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can dig it.
Yeah. Just have to make sure you got
it. I love the fact that the technology has advanced to the point where you can now actually, mimic meat, legitimately, and nobody would notice unless you told them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, which, speaking of Burger King, I didn't put it on here because I just remembered it now, but they've been running an ad campaign that's counter to the whole thing that McDonald's is known for, putting preservatives in their food.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it suspiciously not mold as it ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So their ad campaign is showing moldy Whoppers and stuff like that. It's just
hell to the no.
But it's I get the point you're making, but It's a weird thing to market to people. It's like, hey, try out our food.
By showing
make
them
sure you eat it within like a few days. Not gonna look great. But yeah, the I guess this must be one of the things they're gonna be offering here, like an Impossible Meatball sub. The thing that makes it Disney, I guess, is that they have like a the Mickey head like burned into the bun. Like branding it. It's like, okay, that's weird.
Weirdly on the nose there, but
Yeah, that's what they do.
Like, hey, this we can prove has no mouse meat in it. But yeah, they're gonna be it makes it possible the preferred plant based burger of Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, and Disney Cruise Line.
Yeah.
Which I guess I also just remembered that Bob Iger is no longer the head of Disney.
He resigned.
Or he's stepping down as of, I think, 2021. It's like some weird thing where it's like 18 months ahead. But they're replacing him with another guy named Bob, who is like one of the heads of their park system. So he's coming from this whole part of the business. Which I saw people referencing the parks department. I was like, wait, what? They're making a parks and recs hire here. Leslie Knopes is the new head of Disney. But hey, some more options at Disney's Disney parks are pretty good.
So according to apparently in order to sort of meet climate change demands, the human race is going to have to cut its meat consumption in half by 2050. And it actually looks like it might actually happen.
Well, there's some cultures that largely don't eat meat.
Well, there's some cultures where like meat was never like the center of the meal. You know, like if you go in Southeast Asia, like if you're in Southeast Asia, the center of the meal has always been the rice, and everything else is like side dishes or banchan or whatever.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, and fish now, is a lot better than chicken and cow.
Yeah. So now we're at a point now where, you know, meat consumption is in fact going down, and we have now sort of gotten to master the technology where we can effectively mimic meat with and so
get it to a reasonably affordable price.
So once they master this and lab grown meat, we're probably going to see a gigantic decrease of meat consumption in our lifetimes.
It'll be interesting to see, like, when I don't think Taco Bell's gotten into it too much, though I know a lot of their meats is soy. A good chunk of it is. But once they can get like 100% of that, it still tastes like Taco Bell. That'll definitely be a big thing. Because a lot of their menu is all beef. Based, at least.
But anyway, next up, we got some Star Wars news, folks. So everybody remember the Star Wars Expanded Universe back in the day?
Place of crazy ass shit.
Oh, God, yeah. Dark Empire.
Yes.
The Horse Jedi. Luke. The Luke clone made off of his hand that got cut off.
I forgot about that.
I didn't realize until I was reading through the Thrawn trilogy that was part of the Thrawn trilogy. I was like, wait, that stupid thing is in this?
Mara freaking Jade.
Mara Jade, Luke's wife. But yeah, well, they're going back and they're starting up the new a new expanded universe. They're calling it the Star Wars: The High Republic. It takes place centuries before the Luke Skywalker saga.
200 years before the Phantom Menace. So not quite the Old Republic, but definitely the heyday of the Jedi.
And the first book that's being put out is by Charles Soule, one of my favorite writers. Soule is also a, Soule's already published two novels before, but he's probably most famous as a comic book writer. And he's actually like one of the main Star Wars comics writers right now. Of course, he's done a bunch of other stuff too, but that's the big one. So,
yep, they're doing comics and books and all this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're going to see the first books and comics are set to debut at Star Wars Celebration Anaheim in August 2020. With Star Wars, The High Republic, Light of the Jedi, a massive interconnected story that's told across various formats by various publishers. And yeah, that first wave is subtitled Into the Dark by Claudia Gray.
Mm. Yep.
It's a young adult novel.
Mm-hmm.
There's A Test of Courage, written by Justina Ireland. Let's see. There's The High Republic Adventures by Daniel Jose Older.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I guess it's just a straight Star Wars The High Republic Marvel series by Kevan Scott.
Yep.
Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule.
Yep.
And yeah, that's the adult novel of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, some more interesting stuff getting beyond the Skywalker stuff.
Yeah. But let's be honest, that was kind of what's been hampering the sort of Star Wars franchise that's been
their
in business
hands right now.
Their obsession
with, like, finishing it is kind of been driving them to go a little bit overboard with some of that stuff.
Yep.
But yeah, now they can kind of get to a place where there's not too much. Like, I think Yoda would be the only character that would be around for this.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, so I assume he'll pop up here and there.
Yeah.
But now they can sort of come up with new characters. That'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's got to be interesting to see like how much of the old expanded universe they're going to actually grandfather into this.
Yeah.
Because
I definitely like them to get to the Bane stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess interesting way to introduce the origins of the Sith or the the more recent incarnation of the Sith.
Yeah. Mm. So like, briefly talk about it. In the old Star Wars canon, the way that the Sith originally operated up to the point when the Sith, as we know it now, got to the point where it was just what they called the rule of two, which is that there was only two people in the Sith Brotherhood at any given time. One of them was the Master and one of them was the Apprentice. And eventually the Apprentice was supposed to kill the Master and take over them. That was sort of what, you know, Palpatine and Vader's sort of relationship was.
Yep.
And
so that, like, before that, the Jedi and the Sith were just like two sides of a huge galactic war.
Yeah.
They're just the grunts and the people higher up and all that.
Mm-hmm. Were,
like, the gifted ones.
Yeah. And the original Bane trilogy that was written by Drew Karpyshyn.
Mm.
Yep.
Guy who wrote the first two Mass Effect games.
Yep.
And Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of other stuff. In fact, he's with a new studio now. Yeah. Did you hear?
Yep.
I am very excited to see what they come up with. Because I just looked at some of the concept art they've got on there, and I'm like, yes, I want this.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
I just noticed on one of these books, the Charles Soule book, there's a Wookiee Jedi.
Yeah.
On the cover. I was like, all right, I wasn't expecting that to be a thing, but all right, let's go.
Hey, anybody can be a Jedi if they are in touch with the Force.
Yeah.
But anyway. Next up, Indiana Jones 5 will not be directed by Steven Spielberg, but likely James Mangold. Or you can do better, not make the movie.
Yeah, that would be my choice. Just don't.
Yeah, I'm on board with that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, though I like James Mangold. He directed Logan.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know what else he directed. Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah.
Recently,
which I watched, by the way, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like we've needed a new person to kind of take over for this, both starring and directing.
Yeah. Problem is that Harrison Ford is kind of old now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which means the press junket will be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because people bother him about nerdy shit, and he's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
That's the best part of him in his old age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the weird thing is, like, Crystal Skull tried to pass the torch
mm-hmm.
and never did it. Now It's like, you guys got a problem that your main dude is like 80 years old at this point.
Yeah.
You never set up a successor.
Yeah.
Star Wars at least did that. You know, it wasn't always the best outcome.
Hmm. This is kind of different because Star Wars, you know, implies a universe. Indiana Jones is the guy.
Yeah.
You know.
But also the last movie, they tried to introduce a son that had similar skills and all that. Sans, then just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, that movie was Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
but still, it's like, basically, like, that whole movie means nothing.
No.
Because nothing that happened meant anything for the future of the franchise.
No.
Nope.
I mean, it's like, okay,
for all intents and purposes, there are only three Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fourth one is just an abortion. So, yeah.
Still.
Next up. Yeah.
I want to see what comes of this. Just because, like, you guys got to do something that's not going to just fucking drag Harrison Ford's corpse around here.
Yeah.
As amusing as that would be, like, he's not in a place where he can lead an action movie like this. Not unless it's like some weird, like that fucking dog movie's got come out. Which if you've seen
Call of the Wild?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the non-CG shots of that?
Yes, I have.
It's nightmarish. They have a guy that's acting in place of the dog for the physical parts of it.
It looks like some weird fetish video.
Yeah, and I've seen people ironically saying, like, I want this cut of the movie. Just like people wanted the cut of Beauty and the Beast with the guy with the pillow wrapped around him, dressed up as the Beast.
Yeah. Anyway, next up, HBO Max is going to get an exclusive Friends reunion special.
Yeah.
I was going to say that I could care less, but actually I could care less. Caring less right now.
Yeah, the this thing still isn't even out yet. HBO Max. And so yeah, Friends essentially right now cannot be streamed anywhere
until HBO Max comes out.
Yeah, in April I think it is. April or May?
Yeah,
May it is. Okay. Yeah, so they're doing this reunion that is supposed to be not unscripted special, which is weird. And the six stars are going to get at least $2.5 million apiece for this. So they're getting fucking paid.
Well,
yeah, they are.
Well, okay. I was going to say an unscripted special where the six of them are in character. Okay, I could see that working. But yeah,
especially trying to explain the time change because Joey is very gray now.
Yes,
compared to the rest of them.
So.
Yeah,
well, I mean, there's shit for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? It takes about 2 hours tops.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, this is the same. Or they tried to spin him off as his own series that did not go anywhere.
Yeah.
Nope.
But now he's like, he's been one of the, like, the heads of. What's the show, Phil? The car show that he's been the face of for a bit, or he was for a bit.
Top Gear?
Yeah. Was it that?
The American Top Gear?
No.
No.
The British Top Gear.
Huh.
Yeah, I believe he was.
Yeah, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who knew?
It's like a weird tangent for his career for where it was at before. Yeah.
See, because I forgot about this because I'm trying to blot that entire experience out of my head. So.
Yeah, he co-hosted Top Gear from 2016 to 2019. I assume they're still doing Top Gear.
I think so, but yep. I haven't looked.
Let's see. Anyway. Last episode of this current season is March 1st.
Yay.
Seems like ratings are still doing okay.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, last story for the night. Parasite, the film that won, well, just a crap ton of awards at the Oscars this year, including Best Picture, will be exclusively on Hulu in April.
Yeah, this will be when I check it out.
Prepare yourselves, because that movie is a freaking trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's a great movie. An amazing movie, even.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, April 8th, it starts on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also interesting, because it's essentially Disney signing it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like a weird whole thing, especially when the movie is kind of about capitalism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the ultimate capitalist company to sign them.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if there's any streaming service that isn't very capitalist.
Yeah.
Out there, unless it goes on like Crackle or something like that. Or it's just like, oh, you can watch it for free with some weirdly placed ads.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun because it's going to be just more accessible for people.
Yeah.
I think it's been back in theaters for a bit since it won.
Yeah.
For people that can't go to that.
I think Blu-ray is coming out, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Get it there.
Yeah, let's see. You got $155 million box office worldwide so far. Which is amazing for a South Korean movie.
Yeah.
What was the budget?
I don't know.
Oh.
Let's see. Yeah, this just says $48 million in the U.S. and
$155. Yeah, that's what it's
Let's see. Looks like here budget was
$13.5 billion in Korean, $11 million in the U.S.
Yeah. So it has made like 20, like 50 times its budget. Damn.
Yeah, not bad.
I mean, it's a good movie. It deserves it. But,
yeah.
All right. Well, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Wow. Do we ever?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
I'd like to remind all of our listeners, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of is it'll probably be on there, and if not, just wait a few minutes, we'll be there. We're kind of like herpes that way, just gonna let that stand there. So for Flippin' Anatha, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Elogi, I have been your host, the Buzz Brand Perkins. Good night.